Hey, Project Big Screen listeners, you can find us every Monday on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or YouTube. Prime members can listen ad-free on Amazon Music.
Dedication isn't born in the light of day. It's carved in the quiet hours before the world blinks awake. At Boar's Head, we rise with a mission to deliver craftsmanship worthy of your table. A slice of something special folded into every moment worth savoring. Because dedication means delivering only the very best. Boar's Head, committed to craft since 1905.
Welcome back to Double Play. I am here with Nick. Today we are talking about The Ringer and Miracle. Two Olympic films. You selected these two.
Yeah, I thought they have a lot in common.
They do and they don't.
Yes.
One's a true story, one's not.
Mm-hmm.
Both.
Well, we don't know if The Ringer's true or not. I'm sure there could have been somebody that...
Sure, someone's tried this, right?
Try to infiltrate.
What do you want to talk about first?
This is your show. You run the show, my man.
All right. Usually we do the first movie first, the oldest movie first, so we talk about The Ringer first.
Okay, 2005?
Yes, 2005. Johnny Knoxville movie, if you haven't seen it, it's a pretty simple premise. Johnny Knoxville is a guy who's down on his luck financially. His uncle's a horrible person who tells him to basically go compete in the Special Olympics. He's not mentally challenged. He's not physically disabled in any way.
But what he does to disguise himself as mentally challenged is he wears his shorts high.
Right. And like...
it's a dead giveaway.
And speaks in the third person.
Yeah, he calls himself Stevie?
Jeffy.
Jeffy. His real name's Steve?
Yes.
Watched it last night.
Jeffy likes to do this. Jeffy likes to do that. And that, for some reason, tricks these people. This movie's interesting in that... So, you know, right off the bat, you hear that Johnny Knoxville, you know, Special Olympics, you're probably thinking, oh, they're making fun of people with disabilities. That's really not the case of this movie at all.
So, I thought, I haven't seen it since, I actually saw it in theaters. Me and my dad went to go see it because we thought it looked funny. We accidentally walked into Memoirs of a Geisha. So, we had to flip. We had to pivot. I think, yeah. And I didn't remember anything.
Okay.
And... I thought it would be problematic. I was talking to some guys. I was just like, yeah, that's one of those, like, you know how Steve Carell or Rainn Wilson would be like, yeah, The Office couldn't be made today. That's never true. I thought this was the one thing, like, couldn't be made today. The only butt of jokes was towards Johnny Knoxville, really. It was surprisingly wholesome towards the guys that weren't acting.
Right. No, I thought it actually, you know, I was shocked to see this afterwards, but the Special Olympics basically kind of gave this a seal of approval.
And yeah.
It took years. So this was a Farrelly Brothers idea. Farrelly Brothers, of course, most famous for There's Something About Mary and Kingpin and Dumb and Dumber. And they had the idea to make this movie. And for a long time, Special Olympics would not agree to it. Finally, they did. It said, as long as we have basically the last look at the script.
Mm-hmm.
So we will have the last look and we can make any changes we want to. They sent the script. They were happy with it. I give them a lot of credit because, I could see how they would have some apprehension. But this movie, I think, really makes people who have disabilities and the Special Olympics as a whole look really great.
Yeah.
And it shows that, they each had different personalities. It really fleshed out some characters you don't typically see in film.
Can we make a comparison to Miracle or should I wait?
You can do that if you want to. Sure.
I thought the character development of these athletes were better than that of Miracle.
I agree with you. And I think there's a few reasons why. First off, Miracle, we'll talk about this a little bit here. The guys play on the hockey team, they went with athletes first.
That's very apparent.
Yeah.
I have written down. I'm not a big sports movie guy.
Okay.
I'm sorry to cut you off.
No.
That was the one thing that will break immersion in a sports movie is really bad sports, like very bad play.
Yes.
Football was a huge one.
Like Tim Robbins and Bull Durham, I always liked, you know, people love that movie and that's great, but like he doesn't look like a pitcher.
Right. And you can't really fake hockey. So them doing that was, it made for a better movie, I think.
Oh, absolutely.
But towards the end of Miracle, when they're zooming in on the players' faces, it's really emotional. I'm like, who's that? Who is that? Who the fuck is that? Like, I wasn't as attached.
No, and there's that barroom scene in Miracle, which is the worst part of the movie, when you can see that these guys can't act.
Yeah.
Like, they're not on skates, they're just having a conversation. It just doesn't feel natural or authentic. Yeah. Kurt Russell's not in the room, it doesn't feel right. It's funny, with this movie, The Ringer, everything feels authentic. It feels real.
I think it's because it is.
Yeah, I think you're probably right. In fact, if anything, you're right. Because, like, if anything, the person, although I think he did actually a very nice job, is Johnny Knoxville. But at times, you're right. Like, all he did was hike his pants up.
Yeah.
Like, that's not. That's,
yeah. But, yeah, I thought the side guys in this had they were unique. They were individuals. It was really, for the premise of the movie, as ridiculous as it is, it was tastefully done.
Now, some of the guys who were playing people who were mentally challenged were not mentally challenged, and some were, which is a strange juxtaposition.
Yeah, it's like the new Snow White has some dwarves and some aren't.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
But in my head canon, this is in the same universe as Super Troopers, because the one guy that had to eat all the drugs in the beginning of the Super Troopers scene, the snozzberries taste like snozzberries, now is a Special Olympics athlete in this. Okay. So I'd imagine the drugs did something to
him. Oh, right. Yeah. So it's all like canon for you?
Yeah.
It's like
yeah,
another,
it's same
like a,
universe.
It's like a sequel? Yeah.
Yeah. It's the MCU, the mentally challenged universe.
Is this like the Avengers?
Yeah.
So example too of just how bizarre this is. So one of the guys in this, I don't know if it's Tim actually you're talking to about or not, but the guy who has glasses on, he's a
no, that is not. Okay. No, I'm talking about the bandana guy, the sweatband guy.
Right. So this is the guy who has glasses on. He ended up marrying Christina Hendricks from Mad Men.
The titted girl?
Yes.
Wait. No.
So he does this movie The Ringer, where he plays someone who's
and then he lands Hendricks.
He lands Christina 4 years later, they get married. Can you believe that?
Good on him.
So yeah, I married the guy from The Ringer. They're like, Johnny Knoxville, like, no.
One of the athletes. Unbelievable.
So that surprised me doing some research. But the other people in this movie are obviously, you know, very apparently
yes.
have special needs. And they do a nice job, though, because just the idea that you have, like, you know, traditional actors and then you know, special actors in the same scene. But then everyone also, it just feels like everyone's on the same page. I don't know. I was really impressed with that, the acting ability of everyone involved with The Ringer. I was also impressed with the, it was, like, pretty emotional. I had one scene in particular that almost kind of got me to tears.
Yeah.
Which I did not expect.
It was shockingly heartfelt. The beginning starts off bad. Like, he has to enter the Special Olympics because this guy he doesn't want to fire. So it shows, though, that he has, like, this heart.
They had to do that up top, I think, or else this guy is so despicable.
Yes,
you had to
do
something where he goes bends over backwards.
Right. And so they had to do that. And it became – I mean, it followed a formula for sure, but it became really shockingly heartfelt.
I'm just going to say right now about my MVP.
Yeah.
So my MVP for this movie is Brian Cox.
Oh, yes.
Like, this is an unbelievable performance. I mean, so Brian Cox, even when he made this, was still a pretty acclaimed actor. Obviously, now he's most famous for, you know, Succession. But he's been an actor. He played Hannibal Lecter, a type of Hannibal Lecter, if you will, in a movie called Manhunter that came out in the 80s. Michael Mann directed it. Brian Cox has had this, like, long... He's in Braveheart. He's in a ton of shit, even before this. To do this role and to be as committed to being a complete piece of shit. Like, he goes all in.
This might... He might be a bigger villain than the guards in The Boy in the Striped Pajamas, dude. This is a despicable man.
This is a horrible, horrible person. He never has, like, a redemption moment.
No.
And he also never really has a comeuppance.
No.
He just exists and he moves on.
This is one of the most 2D characters in a movie. And it's necessary, though.
But it's kind of a brave performance by Cox, because obviously he knows he's playing a complete scumbag, and he doesn't, if he's like, give a wink to the camera, some actors need to be liked, and they'll do like a wink to the camera a little bit, or they'll like, kind of play it off a little bit, like, hey, we're all in this, Cox is not, Cox is like, I'm this evil bastard no matter what.
Dwayne The Rock Johnson isn't playing this part.
No. And he, like, neither is like Tom Cruise or, you know, Tom Hanks, or some of these actors that just, obviously bad examples, they wouldn't be in this kind of movie anyway, but like, you know, just like, what is this, like a $20 million movie. Mm-hmm. But the idea that, you know, Cox just didn't give a fuck, even though he already had a very established career and went all in, I give him a lot of credit.
Yeah.
And you need that character in this movie, too, I think.
Yeah. Yeah. It's it was definitely necessary, because you needed somebody to hate.
Feeling lucky? You should be. Meet the new Lucky One sweet tea from Miss Peaches, the vodka drink that's positively doing good. Made with real tea and real vodka, non-carbonated, 100 calories. And here's the scoop. Their new sweet tea is the only vodka-based sweet tea on the market. Simple ingredients in a smooth, full flavor that makes it taste just like the real sweet tea. Best part? Every Can helps rescue dogs find their forever homes as they work to a goal of donating $1 million to dog rescues in 2026. So if you love true sweet tea, this one's a no-brainer. Pick up a Lucky One sweet tea today and give back one can at a time.
Yes.
My MVP would be Johnny Knoxville's roommate, Billy, who actually, I'd imagine, I don't know what his exact syndrome was.
Right.
But I think it was pointed downwards.
Yes, I would agree. I think it's a fair compass.
But he stole every scene he was in, and it seemed like he was fully committed to the comedy. And, you know, the scratch on the CD, I was saying that for years after seeing that.
Me and my friends still say it all the time.
Yeah, yeah. And he was just, he was truly funny, but none of the jokes were at, they were jokes you'd make to anybody, you know? Like, none of the jokes were at his expense. It was funny, and he was legitimately good.
And the other thing I like too is that they didn't write this as if they were like Disney characters. They're like, oh, they have only redeeming qualities. Like, no, these are fully fledged human beings. Sometimes they're assholes to each other.
Yeah.
Sometimes they're nice. Sometimes they bust balls. Sometimes they're like, it's all of they're humans. They're complex. Mm-hmm. Like, you know, and a lot of times you'll see in movies, I feel like they portray anybody who has a disability or special needs as like almost being above, you know, angelic status.
Yeah.
Where these are regular guys hanging out, having fun, being themselves.
I mean, they have a mentally challenged dickhead in Jimmy, the really good athlete.
Yes.
But the premise of him, like the idea of like him rolling up to the Special Olympics practice in a limo and has like bodyguards and stuff it's truly funny. But like they made a lot of people wouldn't touch that. Like, okay, one of our antagonists is going to be mentally challenged.
Right.
And they did it and it worked.
And they did it in a way, you hate the uncle. You hate Brian Cox. Yes. Like, he's despicable. You never really hate Jimmy, but you can also understand like why he's like, he's not particularly like a nice guy.
Mm-hmm.
And you're like, oh, I can kind of understand why these guys are sick of this guy coming in and just beating the shit out of him every year. They would want, I also love in this movie too, how the people with special needs sniffed out Knoxville's shit before anybody else did.
Yes.
And I think that's pretty realistic. You'd realize, oh, wait a second. You're not one of us. Like, what are you doing? You're obviously a fraud.
Yes.
I love how they were the first ones to step it out way before like Katherine Heigl.
Like at the lunch table day one, they were just like, you don't talk like us.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think that's a great thing. Now, Katherine Heigl's role is very, it's a difficult role
to play. How dumb would that character have to be?
I mean, she's pretty stupid.
Oh my God.
I mean, there's even a guy that recognizes Johnny Knoxville from high school and she just completely ignores it.
I think writing for women as a man, I'd imagine, is pretty hard. But she's not the most complex character. Like, imagine explaining how you met your boyfriend. And she's like, well, he pretended that he had special needs and he tricked me for a week and then I fell in love with him.
But like, yeah, that's the thing. Like, there's no universe. And I understand he's a nice person in this movie at his root. And he does do nice things for the guys at the end, especially. There's no way she'd ever want any. Her brother had Down syndrome and died.
Yes.
Like, that's the emotional scene I was talking about. They were in the car, and there's a picture of him, and she's like, oh, he's you know, he passed away a few years ago. It's very touching. There's no way she would want to, like, murder this guy.
Yes. She would hate him.
Yes.
And she still ended up with him. She left her hunk of a boyfriend, who is my LVP.
Oh, mine as well.
Patrick.
And we can talk about Patrick right now if you want.
Let's talk about Patrick.
Let's do a Patrick guy, because this guy, he's a horrible actor.
He's a horrible actor. He's the most cliche early 2000s douchebag. I
know why he got this part.
Okay.
Yeah. So the Farrelly brothers, like I mentioned, are the producers. They did not write or direct this, but they were really the people that got this. This movie never happens unless the Farrelly brothers are behind it. Because A, it's a touchy subject, and then B, we have been in production hell for like 6 years. He is married to the sister of the Farrelly brothers.
Okay.
And he's in Kingpin. He had a small part. You might recognize his face from that. But this is way too big of a part for this guy. He's way too limited of an actor. And if you had a real scumbag actor, this would have been such a better movie. You would have had somebody else to hate.
Now, that's one way to look at it. Another way would be trying to get somebody to act in this movie. Like, Knoxville was the perfect candidate for the lead.
Yes.
Because he, you know, he's not coming from an acting background. It's actually cool when he's like doing the high jump, you could see some of his jackass injuries, like the paintball welts on his legs and stuff. But I imagine trying to get somebody. This was at the perfect time because Knoxville was kind of an A-lister at the time, but he wasn't somebody from Hollywood. He was a jackass. Literally.
Right. Yeah. He was definitely top line in movies. I don't know if I call him an A-lister, but close.
He was popular. Jackass was huge.
Jackass was huge. And he was at that time top lining movies. So he's right on the borderline. You're right.
But like, I don't think selling an actor on this if it doesn't go right, is a
career ender.
Yeah.
Yeah. This ends your career.
Yeah.
That's why I give Brian Cox so much credit.
Yeah.
Like, I mean, no, you're right. But I mean, Knoxville, especially, his name was on the poster.
Yeah.
Like, if this comes out and this is incentive at all to people who have special needs, you're right. This ends him.
Yeah.
And this ends, probably ends Jackass, probably ends everything.
Everything.
So this is a really risky part for him to play. Knoxville, obviously a brilliant guy.
Yeah.
Like, I mean, really smart. And, you know, he obviously saw the script and understood what they were doing and understood what was happening. But it takes a smart, brave actor to take this on.
Yeah. And I think, like, if it seems like he's a decent guy as well, I think he wouldn't do like that. They brought him in to be the butt of these jokes, to be.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Outsmarted by these guys and this and that.
Right.
Yeah.
And it's also just like those guys bust his balls, but it's all. But the way they do it, it feels very natural. It feels like just guys hanging out. Like,
yeah.
We all give each other shit in the office. I felt like that with these guys. Mm-hmm. And Knoxville was so good at. He's also just like. You even see this in Jackass, which I think Jackass is great, by the way. I think you see him interact with a bunch of different kinds of people, a bunch of different walks of life, and he treats everyone with a lot of respect.
I think he's typically the most sane one in a group of outcasts.
Right.
And he's good at that.
I wonder if that experience helped him with this movie. It had to have.
Yes.
Like, because it just comes so natural to him. And I said, I just think he's someone that can treat all sorts of people with respect, even though he's, you know, doing crazy stunts, mm-hmm. or in a movie like this where sometimes it does poke fun at people. But, like, I feel like he really was the only person who could have played this.
Yeah, think so.
Yeah.
I think so. And so everything kind of aligned for this. With that being said, I don't think it was the greatest movie.
No.
Okay.
It's not the greatest movie.
It was a typical early 2000s, like, I've been watching, like, nostalgic movies. Dude, Where's My Car? The Animal. This. That early 2000s followed a formula of, they were fast-paced.
Very fast. A lot of quick cuts.
A lot of, it almost, like, seems like a sketch show at points. Just cut, cut, cut. It's uniquely 2005 to 2010, kind of. Maybe earlier.
Or even a little earlier. I didn't talk 2000, 2005, because I did, Bring It On with Kelly.
Yes.
And that had similar cuts. Also, like, bright colors.
Too. Yeah.
Like,
oh, my God. I have a note. Like, the cafeteria scenes were, like shockingly colorful and bright. I like it. Like, movies now are dark as hell.
Yeah. You go through phases. Like, you know, a lot of this goes back to, like, Gordon Willis. He was a cinematographer for Godfather.
Okay.
And when he shot that, it was so dark, people complained, like, I can't even see this. And that became the norm in the 70s. And then you see, like, everything else, a counteraction. So think of the 80s. The big movies like the Schwarzenegger or the Stallone, they're very big and they're bright.
Yeah.
And then in the 90s, you have kind of the independent look, which is kind of like that quirky, too cool for school look. And then the 2000s, you go the other way. It's bright again.
Yeah.
It's almost like an anti-Willis.
Yeah.
And now we're going back to that Willis. So it's funny how, like, you can kind of almost judge a movie, not even having the volume on, but just by looking at it.
Yeah.
And probably, I guess, true with most media, but movies
especially.
In particular. Yeah.
Yeah.
I like this movie. I'm going to end up giving this a 68. 50s average.
What number would you assign for a rewatch? Or is that like a 70s?
I think it depends on the movie. Like, so for instance, like 12 Years a Slave is like a 95, 96.
Those are tough watches.
It's not something I'm dying to rewatch.
Yeah.
I don't know if I'm dying to rewatch for different reasons. I don't know if I'm dying to rewatch this either.
Yeah.
Like, I'm glad I watched it. And I like movies that bring me to, and I talked about this with KB last week, well, different situation with Foxcatcher, but like, I don't know wrestling at all. I don't know anything about the Special Olympics, really. I like when it brings me to a world I'm not really familiar with and with people I'm not really familiar with. And mm-hmm. it's like, oh, that's kind of a fun look into a different, that's what I love about movies. Like, and I love how this movie did that. And I felt like I took something from it.
Yeah. Yeah, definitely. It was like a nice look into it. I would give it, I want a different scale than you. I'm not going to go out of 100. I typically give movies a nick or a no nick.
Okay.
Nick would mean I like it. No nick would mean I didn't. But this one's tougher. So I'm going to go 7 out of 10.
All right. I will give this movie a nick.
Okay. Okay. So good?
Yeah, I recommend. Like, so is this going to be always the thumbs up, thumbs down?
Okay.
And the premise
would you,
was
would
you recommend
this movie to a friend? It's a tough.
So I wouldn't go out of my way to do it. Like, you know, I wouldn't be like, you gotta watch The Ringer. But if someone says, hey, I'm watching The Ringer tonight, I'm like, yeah, check it out.
I think this would be one that is on the living room TV and like somebody else is watching. I catch it 15 minutes in and then I catch myself standing watching it for like 25 minutes. I'm like, oh shit. It's one of those. It's a stand and watch as it's on.
I think, so like you're flipping through channels, you go through TBS, it's on. I might watch until the next commercial break.
Yeah.
And then I'm probably flipping.
Yeah, yeah.
But it's like, oh, this is kind of a fun little, you know, way to spend 5 or 10 minutes with some characters that I like, some, you know, people that I enjoy.
Yeah, it's a feel-good, fun movie. And movies have a fear of being fun nowadays, I think, too. And this was fun. This was good. It was, yeah, 7 out of 10.
Yeah, it's funny. If this movie came out in the following decade, I would say this is like one of the top 5 comedies of the 2010s.
Whoa.
Because 2010s is just, there's no comedy.
Yeah, they stopped.
So like, there's just, you know, in this decade, which is maybe, in my opinion, the greatest decade for comedy, it wouldn't even fall in my top, you know, 30.
There's
and that's not even an insult.
This falls into like those, maybe not Dude, Where's My Car, which had a little bit more of a cultural impact. This is like the same vein as like The Perfect Score, where they had to steal the SAT yep. scores. It's like just those fun, kind of forgettable, but yeah. you liked, enjoyed kind of movie. It falls into that.
I wonder if people with, you know, who are mentally challenged or have disabilities, I wonder if they enjoyed this movie. Like, I wonder if they're like, all right, like, cool, it's like kind of our story, or I wonder if they're like, oh, this movie sucks, it doesn't tell the truth, or it doesn't, it,
yeah,
it's
I think,
stupid to look at us.
I think the rep, they'd probably be pissed at the first act.
Yeah, I imagine, right?
Like, oh, this guy thinks he can come in and beat us. But I don't know. I can't speak for him.
No, I can't. Yeah.
Yeah.
I will say this. I mean, watching it, like you said, not speak, you know, from the outside looking in, I thought it handled it with a lot of respect and care that I didn't necessarily expect going in. Mm-hmm. I figured it wasn't, you know, a whole you're ripping people apart or being horribly cruel, but I didn't know it would be as kind as it was.
Yeah.
Or give as much screen time to people that you don't typically see.
It would be really easy for this movie to be fucked up for the sake of a joke. And
right.
they didn't do it.
Yes.
Yeah.
So I give them a lot of credit. Yeah, this is it's funny. The people involved in this haven't done a ton of, like, they're not the biggest names in films. So, like, the director is, let me see here for this movie. I already got his name. It's Barry Blaustein, who's done, like, TV work. He did write Coming to America, which is very funny. On the other side, he did write Coming to America, the sequel, which is not as good. But he's only directed 2 feature-length movies. He directed a documentary called Beyond the Mat about wrestling. This was his first movie he ever directed that's a feature film. And he directed a movie 5 years later called Peep World, which is about like a family comedy drama that made $13,000 in the box office. Okay. So this was the only movie
this do in the box office?
Yeah, so this did pretty well.
I think this was up against the last Harry Potter, maybe the second Narnia movie, Memoirs of a Geisha. So there might have been some competition.
Yeah, it came out Christmas time.
Yeah.
So that's one of the busiest times,
December
obviously.
December 23rd. Christmas Eve.
Yeah, so, you know, there's a ton of stuff in there. So I think it opened, let me see here, I'm pulling it up. I think it opened in 7th place, which sounds bad, but it's really not. I'm surprised they put this movie in the Christmas rush because it's such a small movie. Like, I don't see how it could succeed. So number one that weekend was King Kong.
Oh, okay. I didn't like that.
I didn't mind it.
It was long.
It was long. The second was The Lion, the Witch, and the Wardrobe.
Narnia. Okay, I was wrong about
that. That was in its third week in release. King Kong was in its second week. Then it's Fun with Dick and Jane.
Oh.
In fourth place is Cheaper by the Dozen 2. In fifth place, Memoirs of a Geisha.
Okay.
Sixth place is The Family Stone. That's with Sarah Jessica Parker, I think Diane Keaton. It's like a family comedy drama. In seventh place is The Ringer.
Okay.
In eighth place is one of my favorite Spielberg movies, Munich, which I think is just a brilliant movie. Ninth place is Harry Potter and the Goblet of Fire.
Yeah.
And in 10th place was Rumor Has It. With The Ringer, like I said, it opened with $7 million. But remember, it only cost $20 million to make.
Opening with $7 million. Yeah, that's pretty good then.
That's not bad.
Yeah.
And it ended up making $40 million domestically.
Okay.
So, you know, you figure once marketing and everything's said and done, you probably did a little better than breaking even. But at the end of the day, that's not bad. And then you have stuff like video rentals back then that I'm sure helped out too. So, all in all, it's profitable.
We're due for a Ringer 2, a reverse Ringer, where one of those guys goes to the real Olympics and gets his ass kicked.
Might not be as a blessing, but
you definitely can't make that. You make
the reverse Ringer.
Someone's trying to, like,
this kid's trying to race Phelps.
Or, yeah, is it
with a pool noodle?
Trying to lose the Olympics on purpose and, like, take a dive? Yeah. All right, yeah. So, yeah, I think we feel pretty similar. Is your MVP... Who's your MVP? Knoxville? Cox?
His roommate, Billy.
Oh, Billy. That's right. Yeah, you said that. Yes.
Stole the scene, did well. Yeah, he was great.
All right, let's talk about Aura. Did you know that your personal info is out there for anyone to find? Data brokers scrape public tax records, and they sell that information legally, making it accessible to anybody. Nobody wants that. Trust me. I can promise you. Especially me. I don't want any of that information out there. Very dark, dark, deep hentai stuff out there. Anyway, we're thrilled to partner with Aura. Aura is an all-in-one online safety solution that helps you protect you and your family from identity theft, financial fraud, and online threats before they happen. With Aura, you can rest easy knowing that someone is looking out for you. They scan the dark web, look for email addresses, passwords, social security numbers, and other sensitive information. If anything is found, you get an alert in real time. If you're a victim of ID theft, their experienced white glove fraud resolution team will help you navigate credit bureaus and help you do a credit freeze or lock, and they work with you around the clock to help resolve it. They offer a suite of tools to protect you and your loved ones, including real-time alerts on suspicious credit activity, computer virus protection, parental controls, VPN, password manager. It is a comprehensive online safety solution that provides almost every tool you could ever need all in one place. They also help in reducing annoying robocalls, telemarketers, and junk mail by sending takedown requests on your behalf regularly. For a limited time, they are offering a 14-day trial plus a check of your data to see if your personal information has been leaked online, all for free when you visit aura.com/LCB. That's aura.com/LCB to sign up for a 14-day free trial and start protecting you and your loved ones. That's aura.com/LCB. Certain terms apply, so be sure to check the site for details.
Miracle.
Miracle.
This is a better movie. It's a... I had never seen it before. I did this show with Brandon.
This was my first watch as well.
So this is the first time. This is only my second time seeing it. I like this movie an awful lot.
Yeah.
This is really good. It's better than I thought it was going to be.
So you were around 40 years old when the actual Miracle on Ice happened, right?
I was one. I lied. I was 3 months old.
Okay. So I guess you and I, like, the intro credits to it just got me so amped up. It got you in the time. Like,
it goes over the 70s.
Intro. Yeah, it was really great.
Yeah, the whole credit sequence is just basically, like, you're living the 70s.
Yeah, and it catches you all up with the political stuff. And it could have done that in the movie, but it gets right to, and it was really, I was, like, glued from the get.
Yeah. No, I love that intro because the whole idea of it is, you know, America has lost hope and lost, mm-hmm. you know, they had the energy crisis. You know, we ended up pulling out of the 1980 Summer Olympics. Like, there was all, you know, Jimmy Carter was telling people they shouldn't have Christmas lights to conserve energy.
Yeah.
I, you know, you joke around. I wasn't alive for that, or I was barely, but I was alive for the Reagan stuff when they did a total 180 and it became like all about like America's the best, America's the greatest and stuff like that. So I would hear people talk about this time and I couldn't even imagine, even though it had only been like 7-8 years prior, it seemed almost like a whole different country.
Yeah.
To hear how low morale was.
Yeah, it's crazy because you don't really think of that point in time. Like, America's always been, up to, in my eyes, like a pretty patriotic kind of place. But that all that leading up, all the turmoil, it was really, really cool intro before the movie even fucking started.
Yeah, and then it brings you right into Kurt Russell. He's playing Herb Brooks, of course, the head coach. Kurt Russell's, this is, I think, maybe my favorite Kurt Russell performance of his career.
Wow.
Yeah, he's really good in this. Kurt Russell is one of the best actors never to get nominated for an Oscar. You got put like Donald Sutherland into the mix. I put Kevin Bacon in there. Mm-hmm. And I think Kurt Russell's right up there. You know, never getting an Academy Award nomination. And I know a movie like this, a Disney sports movie, you know, you're probably not going to get an Oscar nomination. But, you know, his performance is really good.
I didn't even know this was Disney.
Yeah, and it doesn't feel like we did on this show, we did Remember the Titans, and that feels like Disney.
Yes.
It's like, it's just really poorly paced, this dialogue's so corny and hammy. This does not feel like that at all.
It doesn't at all. The dialogue's very serious and realistic in this.
Yeah.
There's a few of the motivational kind of clips here and there, but...
But I think a lot of that actually happened.
Yeah.
You know, it just feels really authentic, and we talk about it a little bit with the athletes, choosing athletes to be actors... as opposed to the other way around, which I think in most movies, I might be like, I don't know, guys. But in this one, because Kurt Russell is such a great, he's giving such a great performance and has such gravitas on the screen, I don't know if you do need the best actors. And I think it actually works with having better hockey players.
It definitely did in this case, aside from, you know, that last scene that I brought up, zooming in on all these guys' faces and just like, with these helmets on, the only thing that was kind of different about them was their hair. And with the helmets on, they were all might as well have been the same.
Yeah, all white guys. Yeah. Obviously athletic, good-looking white guys. Yeah. And just like 20
Boston accents. Yes. Like, I couldn't tell who was what. The only guy that was unique looking had a mustache and he got cut.
Yes. So. Also, that's a real actor.
Yeah.
And then the other real actor was the goalie, Jim Frey, because he could wear a mask. Other than that, it was all... athletes.
But I think it would have zapped you right out of this movie if you can't fake hockey.
No, especially this kind of hockey.
Yeah.
Like, so my favorite scene, I'm sure so a lot of people's favorite scene is when Brooks is just like, again, again.
Awesome.
Again. And if you don't have, and those guys were really doing those drills. Like, they were like really at gas. It was like real, that really all really happened. Obviously, it probably wasn't as intense as it, but I guess it was, guys were puking and shit. It was real.
Okay.
And, you know, if you have those guys doing drills, you're having actors do it, it doesn't work.
Yeah.
You can't. Like, you can't, like you said, you can't fake hockey.
So, but sometimes it backfires. So, like, the Adam Sandler basketball movie that used real athletes recently.
Oh, yeah.
Those guys, it was Hustle. It wasn't great.
Yeah, I mean, you can miss a lot.
Yeah.
It depends on a lot of things. You don't want to, you know, Oliver Stone used Lawrence Taylor in, tell me, what's the football movie? Any Given Sunday.
But using a big enough name like that is also almost like takes you out of it.
But it works. Yeah. Like he never gave Taylor too much, and Taylor ended up being more naturally gifted acting than I think even than anyone had anticipated. So that worked. But we've seen plenty of times where you, like a movie like Eddie, where Whoopi Goldberg is the coach of the Knicks, and they used a lot of like real NBA players, and they just can't act. Yeah. It's like very obvious. It's like, all right, yeah, the basketball is pretty solid, but like the dialogue is so clunky. We're here, they got the most out of these guys. They weren't bad actors.
They weren't bad actors, but they really, you could definitely tell, they put a muzzle on them a little bit. I'd imagine if they used real actors, there would have been a lot more dialogue. But I think it was for the best for this.
I mean, this movie's already 2:15. It's a pretty long movie.
It's a fast 2:15.
It is. I think you could have still cut some stuff out. But right, it is a pretty quick 2:15, yeah. And there's an amazing amount of hockey.
Yeah.
Like it's you know, obviously you hear a sports movie, but think about like Bull Durham. Like most of Bull Durham is Susan Sarandon stuff. It's not a lot of baseball. Field of Dreams. Much as I love that movie, they talk about baseball a lot, but they're not playing it a super ton. Mm-hmm. With this, you are watching guys play hockey, especially that third act.
I can't think of a sports movie that has more sports.
Oh, yeah. I don't know if I can either off the top of my head. I mean, even a movie like White Men Can't Jump, which has great athleticism from the actors and stuff. But even then, you have a lot of the Rosie Perez stuff. Yeah. And you have a lot of...
Even like Rocky? No.
No.
So, this is the most sports movie.
This might be. And yeah. I will say this, too. It has the best... I said at White Men Can't Jump, I would put for basketball... But this might even be all sports as far as the best athleticism I've seen on screen.
And they knew they had some, like they took advantage of that. The POV camera, like during the games, I'm usually not one for like shaky cam and like fight scenes or anything, but this is just, you're fucking in there it's happening. And it's fast paced. It's intense. It shows you how big these guys are. It's awesome.
I'm not a huge hockey fan. I like hockey very casually. So for me, it was helpful having the Al Michaels stuff in the background because I kind of understood what's happening more.
My MVP.
Ooh, mm-hmm. Al Michaels. I like that.
Yeah.
The greatest, in my opinion, the greatest play-by-play guy of my life. Vin Scully is amazing, but for me, Al Michaels mm-hmm. is the voice of especially football. But.
Yeah. What do they call this movie without him?
Right. Yeah. It's tough to say. So you would pick him over Kurt Russell, huh?
I wanted to be different.
Okay.
And I thought it was cool. Like for the, when they were, spoilers, when the U.S. is about to beat Soviet Union, did they go back to his original?
It was him the entire time, the real, yes. Like Al Michaels now or whatever, yes. In 2010, whatever this movie came out. Mm-hmm. They used that. And then for the miracle, that's the real call.
And you can tell,
he said he didn't think he could match it.
No way.
Yeah.
But you could tell there's a shift. You could still tell it's Al Michaels.
Yep.
He sounds younger. But it makes it all the more powerful when that happens.
Oh, yeah. I mean, it's instant chills.
Yeah.
And you know, so that, you know, we talk about the end of it. You know, obviously, the U.S. wins, obviously. I love when Herb Brooks, because I think it's so true to the character, he doesn't celebrate with everybody.
Mm-hmm.
He goes and just goes into a tunnel, like a concourse, and like is excited there. And yes. That, to me, is who that guy is.
It foreshadows that, like, at the Christmas party where he's like, doesn't want to give the speech. He's not, like, so he goes and just does it.
He's always uncomfortable around people. He's even cold to his wife. Like
yes.
I like that too. It's like, so when this movie was made in production, Herb Brooks was alive. It was during post when Herb Brooks died. He died tragically in a car accident. Wow. And so this was made, like he saw the script. He knew that this was going to be how he was presented. And he was presented as a family man who I think was doing his best, but was very cold and not someone I would want to live with.
No, definitely not. But he cared about his guys. Like he didn't want, he was the only one that did press conferences, didn't let the players go and talk.
Yep.
That was interesting. Like they were just like, do you want, you're doing this to hog the spotlight and everything. It was well done, but Al Michaels was my MVP, but I'm assuming yours is Kurt Russell.
Yeah. I gotta go Kurt Russell. Yeah. Like I said, it's the best performance of his career. And Kurt Russell had a very nice career. The Thing is fantastic.
Yeah.
Hateful
Eight.
Hateful Eight, I like him in it a lot. I don't love the movie as much. It's like my second least favorite Tarantino. I think Grindhouse is worse.
Yes.
There's just an anger to that movie that I think is somewhat misplaced. It's okay. Just so, it's so angry. It's shot beautifully. Yeah. I love the first half, because when I saw it in the theater, had an intermission.
So I did too. You went to see it on film. And they would come and bring out, you got to talk to the guy that was like operating the reel and everything.
Oh, I didn't get to do that.
Yeah, I was in Pittsburgh. It was cool.
Oh, that's very cool. Mm-hmm. I was in New York. They did like a, it was on 70 millimeter. It was great. Mm-hmm. But then the second, I'm like, the second one, this is just too, like, Tarantino's in like a bad place right in this, I felt like.
Matt, yeah. He's a fucked up guy.
Just angry, but all of his other stuff I love. Like, he's my favorite director ever.
Well, it was in the cold, so it's hard to be barefoot in the cold.
That's true. Yeah. Is that why he was mad? Everyone's wearing socks and shoes.
Everybody's wearing socks and shoes.
That's why, once upon a time in Hollywood, everyone's just, LA, it's beautiful. Take those shoes off, baby. My LVP is that it's not a person, it's a scene, which is kind of a cheat, but that scene in that restaurant is so bad, and it really highlights the limitations that the filmmakers had. Like you said, if they were real actors, you would have had so many more scenes in the locker room and so many more scenes. But because of that, we don't get many scenes of them talking because those guys just can't cut it. Mm-hmm. Which is, it's tough to be able to do two things.
Yeah. My LVP would be the assistant coach, the guy from The Truman Show.
Oh, I love him.
I don't think they really let him develop.
You know what, Emmerich? Oh.
All he got was that shitty whistle for Christmas. but I don't know. Like, he was just always like the quiet, meek.
Yeah.
And I'm sure that's how he was in real life, if they did that much this research for the film. But it would have been nice to have somebody that kind of countered Herb Brooks a little bit better.
I don't think Herb would have allowed that.
Yeah.
So Noah Emmerich's in a movie called Frequency, which I have a very soft spot for. It's about a man who finds a ham radio in his house. His dad's been long dead, and he's able to communicate with his dad in 1969 with the ham radio.
Cool.
They're both baseball fans. So you have like dead father, baseball fans. Like, it's like, it was really, oh, he's a Mets fan. It's like made for me. So I love that movie. I know Emmerich plays Jim Caviezel's best friend. Jim Caviezel's the son. So I have a soft spot for him, and that movie. I also love The Truman Show.
Yeah.
So I'm a big Noah Emmerich fan.
I just don't thought he had much personality. Like during the Again scene, I guess he was all right, where you could tell.
You could see
he acted
eyes.
Really well in his face, how reluctant he was to blow the whistle. But other than that, it was like, other than that scene, I thought he was like a pretty disposable character.
Noah Emmerich was really good at saying, Herb, come on.
Yeah.
Herb, come on.
Yeah.
A lot of that.
Yeah.
Which I guess is not the greatest character trait.
Sure.
Did you like Doc, the old man?
I loved him.
Yeah, he was great, right?
Yes. Him keeping time on the bench and like.
I want to say up until recently, Doc, I think, is still alive.
Wow. This
guy's like 1,000 years old. Yeah. The real man.
Yeah.
The real Doc. Yeah. I believe he's still alive, which is, and a lot, it's funny, those 80. So when I was growing up, I don't know if it's the case with you, those guys were still hailed as like America's greatest heroes, even in like 1987, 88.
My dad idolizes that team. I was never really a huge hockey guy. It's probably my number three sport that I like follow.
For me, it's
maybe four.
It's four for me. What's your what?
Football?
You love football the most.
That's college and pro.
Yeah.
College basketball, baseball, hockey's probably hockey. Okay. Four.
All right, and I go MLB by a mile.
Yeah.
NFL. And there's a big drop off for me. And right now, NBA, I don't watch. It sucks. Like, the older you get, the less you have like time, or like some things do fall by the wayside.
It's tough to get into it late. And hockey seems to be like this fraternity of guys, and it's hard to get into.
It's all these like Russian names that I have a hard time pronouncing.
Yeah.
And I don't know. I feel like if I grew up in a hockey family, I would have easily been like all in with hockey.
Yeah.
My parents just weren't sports fans. Mm-hmm. So I just found baseball because of baseball cards. But
this movie, you don't have to be a hockey fan.
No.
Which is done. That's nice. Like, there's a lot of movies like you have to be a fan of the sport, I'd assume, to really, really enjoy
it. And I think if you are a hockey fan, you get doubly rewarded. Mm-hmm. Like, I have my cousin, who's a lot younger than me, he's a huge hockey. He played hockey in college and everything. And he loves this movie. I think there's a lot for hockey fans, and also a lot for us, casual fans who aren't huge hockey people.
It's kind of a... I know how storybook this is, and it's like the story's made for Hollywood. It is kind of odd, like, yes, they beat the Soviets and they have one more game.
I know. I know.
That's how you know it's real life. Like, it wasn't exactly storybook as it would be.
Right. Yeah. I know. Like, when I was a kid growing up, I saw that, miracle so many times, the highlight. And I always thought for a long time that was the gold medal game.
Yeah, so
did I. I remember being like 11 and be like, no, they had to play another game. I was like, oh, shit.
And they almost lost that one.
Yeah, they did. Yeah. Yeah. Imagine if that happened.
Yeah. If they lose that one, does this movie happen?
I'd say Oof, I don't know. I wonder if even the call would be that. I'm guessing it would be. I mean, Russia was such a huge in the 80s. Like, even in the 80s, like, Russia was like, that was like our arch nemesis. I don't know. The movie probably doesn't happen. I think you need a gold medal.
You do.
Yeah. Yeah.
You do. But that wasn't winning the gold medal wasn't the climax of the movie at all.
No, it was not.
Yeah.
And it wasn't the climax of what happened.
No.
So the director is Gavin O'Connor. I bring that up because this is not. I love this movie a lot. I'm going to give this a 91.
I'm going 85.
Okay, yeah, it's fair. Yeah, I'll stick with my 91. It's really well done.
Yeah, it is.
I don't think this movie could be done any better.
This could fall into the territory of yearly watch for me.
Yeah, I can see that. Getting ready for like the NHL,
Something.
Yeah.
What did you guys think of the speech?
The speech, I mean, that's clipped so many times. You'll see that go viral once a week. You'll see, like, if you go to a Pirates game and they're down, they'll play that. Like, it's amazing.
It gets me every time.
Yeah, of course. It gets me every time. Yeah, of course. How could we not talk about that? Good catch, Reed.
It's a fantastic speech. Yeah, and it's great. It's one of those, like, you know, you go through some of the most, like, you know, what do they play at a game to get the crowd pumped up, and that's one of the ones that gets there for sure.
Yes, the locker room scenes were all great. Like when that guy bruised his leg and he wasn't getting his gear back on, and then he got him all fired up on purpose. That shows you a side of coaching that's pretty cool.
Yes,
like he was getting him pissed intentionally.
There were so many like mind games he would play. Like he intentionally was hated by the players, so then they would like each other more. Like,
yeah,
you know, like all of these things that he was doing to like kind of like. A little mental warfare with
he
these
brought
guys.
That one guy in that was real good.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah. Just to prove that they, you know, he wanted them to tell him they don't want him.
Yeah.
Yeah. He did a lot of that like stuff, but it worked.
Yeah.
Yeah. You know, Herb Brooks definitely like a manipulative guy, but I think that maybe that's how it works.
These are all college kids.
Right. Going like on a world stage.
Yeah.
So Gavin O'Connor, and I love this movie, giving a 91. Very big fan. It's not my favorite Gavin O'Connor sports movie.
Whoa.
The Way Back is with Ben Affleck. He plays a...
Is that recent?
Yeah, 2020. He plays it out... It was a movie that came out like a week before the pandemic shut down the world.
Oh.
And he plays a basketball coach who is... who's an alcoholic.
Okay.
And he had lost... His son had passed away and he turned to drinking and he's getting like a chance to be a coach again and he just keeps like fucking up and... but it is... it's amazing Ben Affleck. I think he should have got the Best Actor nomination. It's incredible performance by him. It's a movie that I just think it really like... I remember crying watching it. It's just a movie I really like a lot. And that was also O'Connor. So, you know, Gavin O'Connor, too, my opinion, very good. And I know a lot of people like Warrior, which I've never seen.
Does he only do sports movies?
He's done other... He did a movie called The Accountant with Ben Affleck.
Oh, that's awesome.
I have not seen that. Is
that
good?
He's like an autistic hitman.
Yeah.
Yeah, or Asperger's probably. It's awesome.
I've never seen Warrior. That's what Tom Hardy.
Oh, this guy's really good. Warrior is great, too.
Yeah, I've not seen that. And obviously did Miracle. And then he did another movie I probably should see, Pride and Glory. It's with Edward Norton, who's one of my favorite actors, and Colin Farrell. And they play like New York cops. And Noah Emmerich's in that, too. So he has an interesting career. He hasn't done a movie since The Way Back. So it's been, we're on 3 years now since Gavin O'Connor's done a movie. But yeah, so I mean, I feel like the direction of this movie is fantastic.
Yeah.
It's a little long. It doesn't feel particularly long. And like I said, the hockey scenes, you mentioned the POV shots, some of the shots are just really unique and interesting, great credit sequence up top.
Yeah, you really feel the speed of the game when they're playing. It's awesome.
Yeah, so we both love something we both like, Frozen.
Yeah, Miracle.
Miracle. Why did I say Frozen?
the Disney musical?
So let's talk about Frozen for a minute. What are you ready to take?
I've never seen Frozen.
I've seen bits of it. My niece was really into Frozen for a long time.
That took the
world
by
storm. What's the song in it?
Let It Go.
Let It Go. Yeah.
Yeah. Like charted.
Yeah. It was a huge... it was everywhere. Yeah. Frozen, I don't have much of an opinion. I don't really like cartoons.
I like... There are good cartoons. You haven't seen any Studio Ghibli stuff, though.
I have.
You have?
Princess Mononoke.
Okay. Yeah.
So we did a thing. I did a pop culture podcast called Quantum Week, and we did a fan pick.
Yeah.
And they picked that because they knew I hated.
You didn't like
cartoons.
It.
I did not like it. I was bored to tears.
Really?
Not a fan of Princess Mononoke.
Okay.
Yeah, I did not like that.
Okay.
Very boring. I have not seen anything else though. That was the only one I.
Okay.
I know. What is it?
Howl's Moving Castle.
Everyone
Christian Bale
about
is
that
the
one.
Voice.
Yeah.
It's good. Maybe you just don't like them.
I don't think I like cartoons.
There we go.
I can't get attached to them. I mean, I like The Simpsons. You know, South Park's brilliant. I get it. I can't. Family Guy's very funny. I get it.
Hard to get attached.
I can't.
You need that attachment.
Yeah, I think so. I mean, there are parts of WALL-E that are good. There are parts of what's the movie with the man who has the house? Up.
Up.
Like the first 10 minutes of Up. Like that.
Sad.
Like, very emotional. So I mean, there are certain things that can work.
I don't like being sad when I watch stuff. So you saying you cried like you cried in that Ben Affleck movie?
Oh, the way back. Yeah, the way back I cried.
I wouldn't like that. I'm trying to escape when I watch movies. And I don't know. I don't want to
still feel I'm escaping. Like, so the movies that made me cry the most are Million Dollar Baby and a movie called Room with
Brie Larson.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Those two movies made me like, like in the theater, I'm like, you know, like hyperventilating. Like I'm trying to like control myself so not bothering other audience members, but I'm like weeping. And I felt like I was crying because of what was happening on screen, not because of how it tied back to my life. I still thought I was escaping.
Right, but like, I don't want to see, I'll think about that. Like, I'm not going to go, I'm watching a movie to feel good afterwards. I don't want to watch Manchester by the Sea and then I'm going to feel like shit for the rest of the day.
Yeah, but I think there's great example, because that is probably, that's the movie that tackles grief, I think, the best. Because it shows there's things you just can never get past.
Yeah.
And I think that's an interesting, because movies typically don't do that. Movies, there's always
they want to show the person getting past.
Right. Yeah. There's always a climax, and, you know, the protagonist changes or learns, whatever. You don't see usually a movie where nothing gets resolved, because it's impossible to get resolved.
Yeah.
And I like how that movie handled that, because how do you deal with it? You can't.
Right.
Your kids are dead. You can't move past that. And I found that a very interesting perspective. It does not show 12 Years a Slave. It's not a feel-good movie, but I definitely feel better for having watched them.
Yeah, okay. But like, are you going to buy the DVD?
I own both.
Oh, shit.
But I also big believer in physical media.
Yeah, they're pulling stuff off. They're pulling it away.
Yeah.
I'm surprised The Ringer's on streaming services.
Me too.
Hey, it's Fran from Chicks in the Office. It's peak summer. One plan is turning into five, but trust, I'll be wearing Abercrombie to all of them. Catch me in their Sloan tailored pant at work and then the happy hour right after. The Dylan dress for dinner plans when you want something easy but still put together. And of course, their denim. Because Abercrombie denim just works, no matter the plan. Keep up with the pace of summer without overthinking it. Shop in the app, online, and in stores.
Me too. It was as easy to find as it was.
Yeah.
Yeah. I was a little bit, I think having that Special Olympics seal of approval must have gone a long way.
Mm-hmm.
To their credit, the filmmakers, they were not going to make the movie until they got that.
Yeah. But like, not even a single scene has been like pulled. Like that they could easily go in and drop some stuff that may not.
Especially in that first act.
Yes.
But you need that to establish how shitty these guys are and what they're doing is so bad. Like, I like how in the middle of the movie, the priest throws John Knoxville out of the confessional.
Yeah.
And like, but then later goes on and bets on.
Yeah.
this is like where the Farrelly brothers do a good job. Like, the idea that people in a bar are watching the Special Olympics on TV is like, and they're all excitedly watching it. Like, that just would never happen. It's like, that's a funny premise.
Betting. Yeah. The whole premise is funny.
That you find a bookie to take action on the Special Olympics. That's all funny.
And it would have to be the scummiest person.
Yeah. The scummiest people. Yeah. Yes. All right. Yeah. I enjoyed the movie way more than I thought I would. And a miracle, like I said, I had seen it because I did a show with Brandon and it will never go out. It exists in the world somewhere. But I end up, I'm like, how's Disney, Kurt Russell? Kurt Russell's okay, you know, good, but I ended up like blown away by how good this was. Yeah. I'm not a big hockey guy, liking it way more than I thought.
Really pleasant surprise for me.
Perfect.
Cool.
All right. Well, thanks, Nick.
And yeah, we'll thank you. That was a lot of fun.
Be back next week.
Cool.